To talk to you today about some history of genomics. I think before genomics became very popular, we were pretty happy with the traditional genetic evaluation or the classic genetic evaluation. So for the classic genetic evaluation, what we do, we combine pedigrees with animal performance, with progeny information, and we put everything in this black box that we call blob. And by the end of the day, we have EPDs. And you know that EPD is the expected progeny difference. Another definition for EPD can be the value of an animal as a parent. And a second definition can be the sum of the effects of the genes that are affecting the trait divided by two. But see, here we don't know anything about the genes. We put just pedigree performance and progeny information in this black box. And then what's happening over there, we quite don't know. But then we need to know that we don't know the information about the genes. But what if we could know something about the genes, or we could know the genes that affect in the trait? If we knew that, could we have more accurate EPDs? So based on those questions, we started thinking about using genomics for genetic evaluation. But what kind of genomic information can we use for genetic evaluation? Well, we had the Human Genome Project. It was a big project. And one of the outputs from this project was that most of the variation among humans is due to SNPs. And this is not just true for humans. This is true for animals and for plants as well. So we use SNP information. And what is a SNP? So before talking about SNPs, we need to remember that the DNA is composed by four letters, A, C, T, and G. And during the DNA duplication, some errors may occur. So sometimes we expect a letter C, but we see a letter A. So this is just an error in the DNA. But the DNA is very smart and can repair most of the errors. But some errors, they are not repaired. Some errors, they can be transmitted. Some, they can influence performance. Some, they may be beneficial. And some may be harmful. So SNPs are nothing more, nothing less than errors in the DNA. So if we compare two individuals here in the same position in the DNA, we can see in the same position, in the first position we have G for the first individual, G for the second one. In the second position we have a G for the first individual, but we have an A for the second one. So this is a SNP. So it's a change in a base of the DNA. And this can tell us something about the variation. And the good thing is that SNPs can be used as markers for genes or markers for regions in the DNA that contain the genes. Just for you to understand what a marker is, we have here two bananas. So we have a green banana and a yellow one. If we see the green banana, we know that it's not ready to eat, right? But if we see the yellow one, we know that it's ready to eat. So the banana peel acts like a marker to tell us if the banana is ready to eat or not. So the SNPs, they can act in the same way. If we see some SNPs, we may know that they are linked to some good genes or some bad genes, and it works kind of like that. So by knowing that the SNPs, they can tell us something about the genes. Before 2009, there were some attempts to use SNPs to try to trace the genes. And this is what we call marker-assisted selection, or MASS. But genotyping was very expensive. So what we tried to do was to use couple or few SNPs to try to trace genes. And we did that for some traits of interest, like meat quality, meat tenderness, feed efficiency, and disease traits. But do you know what? It did not quite work well. And why is that? This is because most of the traits of interest for animal breeding, they are polygenic, which means that we have several genes that will affect the trait, and those genes, they have very, very small effect. What happens with MASS is that, let's say, we have several genes, and we use just two SNPs, so we will be able to trace just one gene. We will capture just a small portion of the genetic variance, and we will leave a lot behind. So this did not quite work well. So what happens is that if we have thousands of genes, we need also thousands of SNPs to try to trace those genes. And in 2001, some researchers, Mewissen, Hayes, and Goddard, they started thinking about, okay, what if we could use thousands of SNPs, or if we could genotype animals for thousands of SNPs and use this information in the genetic evaluations? What would happen? Actually, they did some simulations, and they published this study in 2001, and this study was full of promises about using genomic information in animal breeding. The first promise of this paper was that we would be able to use SNPs in genetic evaluation. The second promise was that we will be able in the future to genotype the animals because genotyping will become cheaper. The third promise was that using SNPs, we can calculate EPDs for animals, so we can have molecular breeding values or genomic enhanced EPDs, and we can do that even for animals that have no performance information and no progeny information as well. Maybe the biggest promise of this study was that we can predict EPD with much higher accuracy if we use genomic information. We can even double the accuracy. And in their simulation, actually, they showed that the accuracy for traditional evaluation was 0.4, and for genomic evaluation was 0.85, so more than double the accuracy. Another promise was that this increasing accuracy would be true also for traits with low heritability and traits that are hard to measure or traits that we can collect only few phenotypes. Maybe the last promise was that we can select animals earlier because, and then by doing that we could reduce the generation interval. So we can see that in 2001 we had a plate full of promises regarding the use of genomic information into genetic evaluations. But do you know what? In 2001, genotyping was very expensive. By the way, do you know something that right now is 100,000 times cheaper than in 2001? Well, if we think about like flight tickets right now are 2 times cheaper than in 2001. Laptop computer is about 5 times cheaper. Do you know what is really 100,000 times cheaper now? Genotyping. So the genotyping costs reduced drastically. We can see that it was very expensive in 2001, and then now it's very cheap compared to 2001. And even in 2009, it was relatively cheap. So what happens is that, as in 2009, genotyping became cheaper, Illumina and some researchers from USDA and some US universities, they developed this SNP chip. It's the 50K SNP chip. So with this chip, we would be able to read 50,000 positions in the DNA. So everybody was very excited, especially because genotyping one animal in 2009 was probably $300 or $250. So everybody got excited. But then who would start first? Which industry would start first? The dairy cattle industry started first. So in 2009, they released the first official genomic evaluation. And for this evaluation, they genotyped some bulls. They also genotyped some young bulls with no progeny information. And they found out that there was this young bull without records, without progeny with records. He was the best bull on earth. His name is Freddy. And the net merit is an index that the dairy cattle industry use. The net merit for this bull was $792. And at that time, only 7 bulls had a net merit that was over $700. But do you know what? In 2012, they ran another evaluation when this animal had about 500 daughters with milking records. And they found that this was actually the best bull. What happens is that genomics helped them to anticipate, to know before getting records which animal was the best one. And if we look back at the promises, we can see that that's true that we can genotype animals for thousands of SNPs. And this is especially true because genotyping became cheaper. And with SNPs, we can calculate EPDs. And this is true also for animals that have no records or no progeny records. So we can see that it just took one genomic-enhanced EPD for all the industry to become excited. And then in 2009-2010, Angus started using genomic information for genetic evaluations. Then in 2012, Simmental, Hereford, Red Angus, and Limousin. And from 2013-16, other breeds also started doing genomic evaluation. But then, how the genomic information is included in the genetic evaluation? I think it's important to talk about methods here, because if we had no methods, we could not use this genomic information. So the genomic information actually is just an extra source of information that will help us to get a better estimation for EPDs, so we get EPDs with higher accuracy. But then how specifically this information is included? We have basically two ways. One way is based on SNP effect. So we have here in red the DNA that was inherited by the dam, and in blue from the sire. And we have here the SNPs. So every bar is one SNP. And we have here in the first SNP, the genotype is AA, and the value of A here is 1. For the second one is AB, the genotype, and the value of A is minus 0.3, value of B is 0.3. For the third one is BB, the genotype, and the value of B is 0.5, and so forth. So we calculate effects for all SNPs, and when we sum the effects of all SNPs, we have the molecular breeding value. So this is the approach based on SNP effect. The second approach is based on having better relationships. What happens is that in traditional evaluation, what we do, we use expected relationships. So if we have full SIBs, we expect that they share 50% of their DNA, so the relationship is 0.5. But then if we genotype two full SIBs, we actually can see how much of these 50,000 SNPs they are sharing. So this gain, or this actually realized relationship that we have, we are observing that, helps us to get more accuracy when we estimate EPDs. And which methods we use right now for genomic evaluation? So basically we have two methods. The first one that was implemented for genomic evaluation was the multi-step. So this method here, we can see that we have several steps. The first one, we combine pedigree phenotype, so animal phenotype and progeny performance, and we run the traditional evaluation. Then we get EPDs. We deregress EPDs, we do some tricks with EPDs, and then we combine EPDs with the genomic information, the SNP here. Then we calculate SNP effects. For SNP effects, we have molecular breeding value. Then we can combine molecular breeding value with parent average using an index, or we can combine molecular breeding value with in a correlated approach, and then we can get correlations between molecular breeding value and EPD, and by the end we have the genomic enhanced EPD. Do you know what is interesting? Some people tell me, I don't trust EPDs, but I trust molecular breeding values because they come straight from the DNA. So do you think molecular breeding values come straight from the DNA? I showed you here that we have several steps. First, we need to calculate EPDs, then we deregress, then we calculate SNP effects, then we have molecular breeding values. So we have several steps. And actually, molecular breeding values, they are subject to the same errors that EPDs are. If we have some problems in the pedigree or in the phenotype, those problems will be transmitted to molecular breeding values. Another method that we have is single step. So single step was first developed at UGA in 2008-2009. So this method here combines pedigree, phenotypes, and genomic information in just one step. We can get genomic enhanced EPDs. And right now, there is another single-step method also that was developed by Iowa State University. And we can see that right now the trend in the industry is to move from multi-step to single-step. And this is due to several factors. including simplicity. So single step is much simpler to use than multi-step. And if you want to run single-step evaluations right now, in US, probably we have two commercial software. One is developed by UGA, is the BLUPF90 family. And the other one is developed by Theta Solutions, the software is Bolt. And do you know what? People, they usually ask me, so which software should we use for single-step? Well, it depends on two factors. Two very important factors. First one, if you prefer Daniela or Daniel, or if you like glasses here at UGA, or if you don't like glasses. But independently of the method that we use for genomic evaluation, the biggest promise that we could see was the increase of accuracy of predicting EPDs. But do you think this is true for the beef cattle industry? Let's look at some data here. So here we have the results from the simulated study from Wilson 2001. And we can see here, so they worked with simulated data, so no breed. They used about 2,000 genotyped animals. The accuracy of EPD was 0.4. Accuracy of genomic enhanced EPD, 0.84. So the gain was 110%. Mehdi Saatchi, he was working with Harry Ford for some carcass traits. He got a gain in accuracy of 33%. Rafael Silva, he's a postdoc in our lab. He was working with Nelor cattle, is a breed from Brazil. He evaluated some feed efficiency traits, and he got a gain of 10%. We did some study as well with the Angus data for growth traits, using about 2,000 genotyped animals, and the gain in accuracy was 10%. But see, if we look here, the gain that we had was smaller than the gain that Mewison had in 2001. But we know that if we use a small number of genotyped animals, the gain will be small. So there was this voice coming saying, you should genotype more animals. What we did, so they started saying that we should genotype more animals, right? And some people, they took this too serious. Right, Tom? Yeah. So the U.S. Hosting Association now has 1.6 million genotyped animals. The American Angus has over 300,000 genotyped animals. And this is pretty good, actually. So we try to use more genotyped animals to see what would happen with the accuracy. So in the first study, as I showed you, we used 2,000 genotyped animals and the gain was 10%. Then we used 33,000 genotyped animals and the gain was 21%. So this is true that if we genotype more animals, we will have higher accuracy. But see, we still did not reach the 110% gain that Mewison had before. That voice came again saying, you are using only 50,000 SNPs. It is not enough. You need to genotype for more SNPs. You need to use at least 300,000 SNPs. Okay, we did not do that, but some people did. And Paul Van Raden, he did some simulations. He used 50,000 SNPs, is this blue bar here. And then he compared with using 500,000 SNPs, the green bar. And he tested for different numbers of genotyped animals, and the gain that he had was just 0.02, so a small gain by using more SNPs. But do you know what? Some people think that if we torture the data long enough, the data will confess to anything. So, instead of genotyping for 50K, why don't we sequence the animal? Let's sequence the whole genome of the animal. Okay, we did not do that, but guess who did that? Paul Van Raden. He did that. So what he did? He sequenced some animals for 30 million SNPs, and then he selected 17,000 SNPs that had the greatest effect in about 34 traits. So he selected those 17,000 SNPs. He combined with the 60,000 SNPs that they use in their evaluation. And at the end of the day, for 34 traits, he had a gain of 0.027. So this gain was very small. I'm not saying here that sequence information, it's not helpful. I'm just saying that probably with the methods that we have right now, we cannot get a big gain in predictions by using this data. So we genotyped for 50K, 500K, and even sequence data. So why the gain was still small when we had more SNPs? If we think about methods that use better relationships, we need to know that the relationships, they are already accurate with 50,000 SNPs, so using more SNPs will not add us a big gain. If we think about methods that use SNP effects, what happens is that we just have more SNPs, but we have the same amount of phenotypes. So it's like having a pizza to split among 10 people or the same pizza to split among 10,000 people. So it did not help. And another thing that we need to know is that the DNA is inherited in blocks. So if we have few SNPs or if we have more SNPs and they are in the same block, it will not matter. And because the DNA is inherited in blocks, so we select for some genes and other genes, they come together. Whether they are good or they are not, they come together because of what we call genetic hitchhiking. Okay, so we use more genotyped animals, we genotype for more SNPs, we try to use even sequence data, but why we did not get the gain of 110% that Mewissen got in his simulated paper? Well, this is quite easy. What happens is that in his simulation, he assumed that some genes, they had a very huge effect on the trait. So the genes, they were explaining a huge amount of variation of the trait. But we know that most of the traits that are of interest for us, they're polygenic. So they're composed by a big number of genes with very small effect. What happens is that in their simulation, the assumptions were not according to what we have in real life. Okay, so here if we look back at the promises, we can see that we need a quick fix here, right? So the accuracy of prediction increases, it's not doubled, it increases. And this is true. And this increase in accuracy is also true for traits that have low heritability or that are hard to measure. But what happens is that for those traits, although we can have a gain, this gain is smaller than for traits with higher heritability. And this is what we can see here. This blue line here shows the gain in accuracy when we increase the number of genotyped animals, but for a trait with low heritability. And if we compare with like the green line that has a heritability of 0.5, we can see that the gain in the blue line for a trait with low heritability is much lower. And what about this last promise here that we can select animals earlier and reduce the generation interval? Is it true? Yeah, it's true. So what happens is that, let's say we have a bull. This bull has no progeny records, has no information, no performance information. So the accuracy, let's say, of EBV is 0.25. And then let's genotype this animal. The accuracy is 0.4. If we instead add some progeny performance here, the accuracy can be similar to when we just genotype this animal before he has some progeny information. What happens is that the genomic information is acting like progeny information and depends on the trait, the heritability, and some other factors. Genotyping can be equivalent to having like 5 to 30 progeny records. So if genotyping is equivalent to have progeny performance or own performance, does it mean we don't need to collect phenotypes anymore? Does it mean? No. The truth is, there is no magic here. We still need to collect phenotypes. We can see here in the multi-step method that we need phenotypes. The phenotypes are there. Single-step method, the phenotypes are there as well. So if we have genotypes, without having phenotypes is the same as having a credit card without having money to pay the bill by the end of the month. So we can genotype, we can use the benefit, right? We can genotype, then we can take selection decisions earlier, but then later we need to genotype because we need to keep the cycle going. We need to keep the game. So we genotype, and then we can make selection decisions early, but then we need to phenotype, and this will help to take selection decisions earlier for the next generation. So it's very important to keep phenotyping because there is no magic here. And talking about magic, some people tell me, do you know what? I like genomic enhanced EPDs, but I want to see molecular breeding values. I need to tell you that molecular breeding values, as we saw before, is the sum of SNP effects, right? And what is genomic enhanced EPDs? Molecular breeding values plus the contribution from parent average plus contribution from performance plus contribution from progeny records. And we know that if we have more information, we have higher accuracy. So which one has higher accuracy, molecular breeding value or genomic enhanced EPDs? Genomic enhanced EPDs. So what I want you to know is that when we have genomic enhanced EPDs, we need to make selection decisions based on genomic enhanced EPDs. Once we have genomic enhanced EPDs, molecular breeding values are kind of out of the game. Okay, so if we have more information, we have higher accuracy. What does it mean to have more information? Having more information also means to have more genotypes, more phenotypes, and more pedigree. And do you know that having more genotypes was a challenge for us? So the methods that we had available for genomic evaluation before 2015, they were not able to handle lots of genotyped animals. And right now, genotyping is very cheap, so we can genotype millions of animals, right? So although we can genotype millions of animals, we need to remember that the DNA is inherited in blocks. So if we trace those blocks back, we will see that the animals, all animals, actually, they have few ancestors. So for beef cattle and dairy cattle, if we use about 4,000 blocks, we consider about 4,000 blocks, it's equivalent to 4,000 animals. And they will explain actually 90% of the variance, the genetic variance. If we add about 10,000 blocks or about 10,000 animals, they will explain about 99% of the variation. So by knowing that, our group came up with a way to use all genomic information in the evaluation. So before 2015, our single step that was developed at UGA was overloaded, was looking like this truck here. So the maximum capacity was using 150,000 genotyped animals. But see, single step now has a brand new look. So single step now, what we did, so we changed the method a little bit. We did some change. And right now what we do, do you remember that about 14,000 animals would explain 99% of the variation? So those are the important animals. So we get those animals and we put them inside the truck. They fit inside the truck. And all other animals, we can have millions of genotyped animals, they are in the trailer. So we can see that we are carrying all genotyped animals. We are using all, but some, the most important, are inside the truck. The other ones are inside the trailer. And what is the limitation right now? I cannot tell you the limitation because we need to keep genotyping. I can tell you that we can use millions of genotyped animals. And this new single step that is able to handle big numbers of genotyped animals is called single step with APY. We have done some tests already with American Angus data, and we ran some evaluations for about 300,000 genotyped animals, over 10 million animals in the pedigree for pretty much all traits that Angus is selecting for. And if you want to know more details about that, you can go to Steve Miller's talk this afternoon. We have done some tests at UGA as well using U.S. hosting data. We use about 760,000 genotyped animals, over 20 million animals in the pedigree, and this was done mainly by Yutaka Masuda. He's a researcher in our group. And right now, Zoetis is using this single step with API for their U.S. hosting evaluation. They use more than 200,000 genotyped animals. So from everything that I told you today, I need you to keep in mind that we had lots of promises in 2001, and they were a little bit higher than we realized, but still, using genomics is helping us a lot. So with genomics, we can increase the accuracy of selection, we can increase the accuracy of EPD. This increase is not really big, but it's a big increase. And it allows us to select animals earlier so we can reduce the generation interval. And we need to know that we need to keep genotyping and phenotyping. So I told you that we can increase accuracy of EPD, we can reduce the generation interval. So if we look here at the breeder's equation, some of you may be familiar with this equation. So we have the genetic gain is equal to selection intensity times the accuracy times genetic standard deviation divided by generation interval. So if we increase accuracy, if we decrease generation interval, what happens with genetic gain? Genetic gain will increase. If we increase accuracy, reduce generation interval, genetic gain will increase. But this formula has another parameter that nobody talks about, which is delta. This delta is how much you trust in the genetic advisor or how much you trust in the breed association or the breeding company. This value can go from 0 to 1. So if you trust, and this value is 1, so you get the maximum gain. But if you don't trust, this value is 0. So what happens with genetic gain? 0 as well. So probably the last thing I want to show you today is that some people ask, how much genetic gain can we have? So I'll not try to predict here how much genetic gain we can get. I'll just show a real situation here. This is from PIC, Pig Improvement Company. This is a genetic trend for some index that they use, a combination of several traits. And we have here from 2006 to 2016. In green here, we have the expected genetic trend if nothing had happened in 2013. But in 2013, they started using genomic evaluation. They started using single step from UGA. And then look what happened with the genetic trend. So they had a gain of about 35%. So I want you to keep in mind that although the promises were very high, we still can have lots of benefits if we use genomic information correctly. So with that, I'd like to thank some collaborators here and thank some people from our group, people that have been working with genomic evaluation. So thank you.